Good morning. It is the Big Sports Breakfast this Wednesday, the 19th of January. This morning, we're riding the roller coaster of Nick Kyrgios. It was the good Nick last night at the Australian Open, winning in straight sets over Liam Brody. He served 21 aces. It was a straight sets demolition. Jamie Rogers and Phil Moss with me this morning. And we seem to always go on this roller coaster with Nick Kyrgios at the Australian Open because the start of the tournament, we go, no, we're off him. But then a couple of games in, you're like, oh, maybe he's changed his tune.
He sucks us in, especially when he looks like he's having so much fun out there on the court. He was serving 220 kilometres, which is just phenomenal. Even Brody had a little chuckle when it came up on the board at how fast that serve was. And as Nick said, he served bleep very well. And he now faces Daniel Medvedev. But it's just great to see Nick playing some great tennis, considering the lead-in that he has. He pulled out of both of the tournaments because he was sick. He had COVID. And he looks like he's backed up well. So let's hope he can go deep into the Australian Open.
Yeah, that's right. We've got plenty to watch, haven't we, with Ash Barty, Stan Sosa, Nick Kyrgios. Look, I think this is the way he started. And there's two ways to look at this, the way he started last night. The only way is down or he's set himself up for a magnificent run in this tournament. And I think, you know, he needs to deliver, as one of our listeners wrote in earlier. You know, he hasn't made a quarterfinal since in a Grand Slam since 2015. Now, with the game he's got, as you pointed out quite rightly, Ryan, he has got the game to win a Grand Slam. Has he got the mindset to win one? Has he got that steely focus to get him all the way through a Grand Slam? If you've got the game to do it, then it comes down to mindset.
Look, he's even having sips of beer on the court from a random patron, which I reckon if he hadn't had COVID, he probably wouldn't have done that.
Yeah, I was going to say, it probably wasn't the best decision for a guy offering a beer.
Some random
COVID,
the crowd.
You know, I'm sure he's clear of it now.
But I think, just to that point, though, and I know that's probably not the best thing to do protocol-wise, but for it shows me that he's in a good frame of mind, that he's that he's played a wonderful game and he's keeping himself relaxed and having a bit of banter with the crowd and things like that, which is a good sign. But has he got that steely focus and the strength of mindset to go all the way through?
Five of the 12 Aussies won on day two. There's three Aussies in action today. Ash Barty, Alexander Vukic and John Millman will be talking tennis this hour with Roger Rashid. Always great to talk to Roger. And interesting to see the Big Bash as well overnight. The Hobart Hurricanes, they made the finals, defeating the Melbourne Renegades by 6 runs. Six of the national squad, so six players that have featured in the test matches that we've seen against England over the summer, will now return to the Big Bash. Usman Khawaja will captain the Sydney Thunder. That game is tonight, taking over from Chris Green. Nathan Lyon, he returns to the Sixers. Manus Labuschagne returns to the Brisbane Heat. Scott Boland, he's going to be playing for the Hobart Hurricanes. And Jai Richardson, Mitch Marsh and Josh Inglis, like the Perth Scorchers, needed any more bolstering. They're absolutely flying. Will return for them. And the Adelaide Strikers, Alex Carey and Travis Head, will both play on Friday night. So the Big Bash is copped it a little bit this summer. A lot of people have said they're over it. Question, now that a lot of these big names are back, a lot of the Aussies are back, will you tune in maybe a little bit more to the Big Bash?
Oh, I think a marquee never hurts, does it? A marquee name, marquee player. I think, you know, shifting the mindset from an Ashes series in Test cricket to another form like that so quickly is not going to be easy for those players, but they're paid to do a job, and that's what the public expect of them and their coaching staff, of course. But yeah, I think those big names will certainly help spike a little bit more interest.
Plus, we're heading into finals, so when you get to the pointy end of a season, I think whether you're a fan of the game or not, you will tune in to watch it. I like it. I enjoy the spectacle. I prefer watching Tests, but I think it's a great spectacle and we'll all be tuning in, especially now we're heading into finals.
Yeah. Well, speaking of finals, or playoffs as they call them in America, we've been talking a bit about the NFL this morning, and the NFL wildcard round is over. And I think a lot of people will say happy that it's over because there was some pretty one-sided matches, wasn't it? Most of those matches were decided well before the final whistle. But the playoffs get very serious with the divisional rounds taking place on Sunday and Monday. Recapping those, San Francisco at Green Bay is the opener. Then LA Rams take on Tampa Bay. Sorry, I missed one. Where do we go? Buccaneers, sorry. They take on, sorry, I've lost my, Jamie, help me out here. Sorry, we've got Tennessee and Cincinnati, Green Bay and San Francisco, Tampa Bay and LA, and Kansas City take on Buffalo. That's the order of how they're going to be playing out. Some terrific matchups. I might have butchered the intro to Dick Fane, but he'll absolutely save this segment in more ways than one. Good morning, Dick.
It's very fitting because I usually butcher the segment. So it's all
never
at all. But I think it was a fair statement, wasn't it, what I said about the wild cards. Oh. Many of those games were a bit of a fizzle, weren't they?
It really, the first time in 40 years, guys, that we have had three games in the first round of the playoffs decided by 20 points or more. So truly a historically one-sided situation. And we had some blowouts in last year's. It wasn't quite as one-sided, but this, it's too early to call it a trend, but obviously it makes sense. When you extend the playoffs and put a 7 seed in the AFC and the NFC, instead of just cutting it at 6, you're bringing in 2 mediocre football teams into the playoffs. And each one of those mediocre teams, the Steelers and the Eagles, just got absolutely blown out. So it's an attempt to keep more cities interested in the late stages with the parity and keep more teams in the playoff race. But it comes potentially at a cost of having those first round games be very, very one-sided like we saw this week.
Dick, what were your thoughts on LA Rams' win over the Cardinals?
Very impressive. I thought the Rams would win. I did not think they would win like that. I mean, they absolutely shut down Kyler Murray in that offense. Now, the Rams came into the playoffs much hotter than the Cardinals did. I mean, the Cardinals lost to my Seahawks last week in fairly convincing fashion as well. So the Cardinals weren't playing very good football. So I think the question leading into this week is, was that more the Rams or was that more just the Cardinals really falling off over the last month of the season? And we're going to find out very, very quickly in what appears to be a really intriguing game in Tampa Bay. And that game, I think the line for that game is probably about right with Tampa being favored by 3. They're really calling those two teams even and just giving the Tampa Bay Buccaneers the home field advantage. Now, the Rams, I think, are a better team across the board with the obvious exception of quarterback. Now, Matthew Stafford has a pretty high ceiling, and if he plays like he did last night and hooks up with Odell Beckham Jr. next week, they absolutely have a great chance of winning that game. But, you know, it's always dangerous when you're betting against Tom Brady in the playoffs, but Tom has got a lot of injury issues. He didn't have Leonard Fournette this week. We'll find out if he'll have him next week. He's not going to have Chris Godwin. He's not going to have Antonio Brown, who's been booted off the team. So this isn't the same Tampa Bay offense that it was even 4 or 5 weeks ago. So I have serious doubts whether Tampa can win 3 games in a row over elite competition. They're going to have to beat the Rams. They're going to have to likely beat the Packers. And then they're going to have to beat either the Chiefs, the Titans, or the Bills to win the Super Bowl. I think that as godlike as Tom Brady is, with the guys he has around him, the injuries he has around him, I think that's probably too much to handle. And I'm really pushing Tampa down in my chances to win the Super Bowl because of that.
Dick, you just mentioned the Chiefs. What did you make of their win over the Steelers?
You know, impressive. Again, was it more the Chiefs or was it just that the Steelers didn't belong in the playoffs? It's probably a combination of the two. The Chiefs have really righted the ship since the early season, guys. I mean, remember, this Kansas City team was 3-4 through 7 games, and they have only lost 1 football game since. So they are really clicking on all cylinders. And right now, they are the favorites out of the AFC to get to the Super Bowl. I would put them ahead of the Bills. I would put them ahead of the Titans. And it strikes to be a absolutely fantastic game this weekend. I mean, if you want, just from an entertainment value standpoint, and you can only sit and watch 1 game this weekend, that's the one to watch. CBS, Bills and Chiefs. It's at 3:30 p.m. Eastern time. You know, that figures to be about right now. Early morning your time on Monday morning. That is the game to watch in the NFL playoffs this weekend.
Now, Dick, can you just talk to us about the Cowboys 49ers on Monday? And we were speaking quite extensively on the show yesterday. And whether you love or hate the Dallas Cowboys, when I just watched it, I just felt that's not how a game should end.
It shouldn't. I think Cowboy fans are making a little bit too much about the officials there at the end. I mean, keep in mind that the Cowboys were getting just physically beaten down for 3.5 quarters of that game. The San Francisco 49ers dominated that football game. Now, handed to the Cowboys, they made a nice run late to give them a chance to win the game. But the 49ers were the better team on the field. They were the team that should have won that game, and they did. The only fault I have with the officials on that last play is that back judge has to be way closer to the line of scrimmage. He ran like 30 yards chasing Dak Prescott. It's almost like he gave Dak Prescott a 30-yard head start on his quarterback draw and then decided, oh, yeah, I have to go spot the ball. So the official needs to be much more quick on that to get the ball spotted. But Dak Prescott also can't just leave the ball for the official to take. He needs to slide, pick up the ball, hand it to the official, because as soon as I saw Dak running, I actually thought it was a good play call. Mike McCarthy, Kellen Moore are getting a lot of flack for calling a quarterback draw with no timeouts left. But if you just execute it properly, Dak slides, picks the ball up, hands it to the official to allow it to be spotted. They have 2 or 3 seconds to spike the ball easily and have one more shot at the end zone. So it was partially Dak's responsibility. It was also poor officiating as well, not being closer to the football to spot it in time.
Just on the 49ers, they take on Green Bay. They're the shortest prize favorites in the divisional rounds this weekend. They're $1.40, San Francisco $3. And they are favorites to win the Super Bowl. Green Bay, is it a case that Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers should get it done?
They've been my pick all along. I'm sticking with them and the Kansas City Chiefs in the Super Bowl. And I think a lot of this game has to do with injuries. There's a couple key injuries. The Packers may be getting Za'Darius Smith, their pass rusher, as well as Jaire Alexander, their cornerback, back this week. They have not played in months. So that makes a good Packer defense very good if you bring those two guys in. And then the injuries to Nick Bosa as well as Fred Warner for the 49ers. If the 49ers have neither one of those guys or even have only one of the two, they're in deep trouble. Deep trouble. But if the 49ers have them both and they're both playing near Nick Bosa and Fred Warner ability, then that defense can match up with the Packer offense, and we're going to have a game. So that's the game. I'm not going to tip that game yet right now, because that's the one game of the four where I think injuries could really factor in. So keep an eye on those two Packer guys I told you about, Alexander and Smith, and keep an eye on Nick Bosa and Fred Warner throughout the week before you decide to lay any money on either side of that game.
So just giving the tab odds for those games: Tennessee and Cincinnati, $1.53 Tennessee, $2.50 Cincinnati. Green Bay, $1.40 San Francisco, $3. Tampa Bay, $1.65 LA, $2.25. And Kansas City, $1.75 Buffalo, $2.10. In those playoffs, which start this Sunday. And Dick, we've got plenty of people with questions for you on the text line this morning. We might fire a few of those at you.
Yeah, one, Dick, comes from Cal in Bathurst. Can you ask Dick where he expects Russell to head next year, given his recent comments?
That's so Russell, I'm assuming, Wilson.
Yeah, Russell Wilson, the Seattle quarterback.
Well, it's obviously a big story nationally. I think the national reporters, as they did last year, are making a mountain out of a molehill, as we say here in the States. I don't know if you have that saying. I think it's not much ado about nothing, but it's much ado about very little. The Seattle Seahawks hold the rights to Russell Wilson for as much as 4 more years. 2 years under contract. They could franchise him for a third year. They could franchise him for a fourth year, even though that would be very, very expensive to do. They hold all the cards here. And I don't think Russell Wilson is the type that wants to damage his legacy by coming out and saying, I want a trade. I'm demanding a trade. I'm not, you know, pulling a James Harden of last year, right? Russell Wilson is not going to pull a James Harden. He's not going to say, I'm just going to sit until I'm traded. That's just not Russell Wilson. He is way too concerned about his legacy, way too concerned about his public image, and he doesn't want to damage that. I think his representation probably wants him out of Seattle more than Russell actually wants to be out of Seattle. The only way Russell gets traded is if somebody comes in to somebody comes to Seattle and just offers a deal that the Seahawks cannot refuse. I mean, we're talking about three first round draft picks plus a couple of players, one of them being a capable starting quarterback. Unless something like that comes through to Seattle, Seattle's holding on to Russell Wilson. He's going to be a Seahawk for at least one more year, if not more.
And, Dick, another one here from Baddick's Best. It says, Dick, well, Joey, you just mentioned Joey Bosa and that we should keep an eye on him, but will he clear NFL concussion protocols, and can you explain how it works if it's his second concussion this year?
Yeah, he just the concussions are so tough. I mean, they're not like any other injury, right? You just there is a typical protocol that you have to go through. I do think the being a second concussion, I do believe I'd have to double check, but I do believe that the standard to get through that protocol is higher than it would be if it's your first. But it's just, you know, it's really tough to say. I mean, it's very unpredictable whether he's going to be able to clear it by next week. But it's a very, very key part of that 49er defense, the most key part of that 49er defense, along with Fred Warner. You're talking about by far the two best defensive players for the 49ers. And if either one of them are out, it should be a field day for Aaron Rodgers.
And, Dick, I woke up this morning to a push notification from the Bleacher Report announcing that almost three-quarters of players in the NHL have now tested positive to COVID.
They are changing the rules. I just saw a report a couple of hours ago that they're changing the rules in the NHL beginning after the All-Star break. If you are asymptomatic, you do not have to test anymore in the NHL. And that's one of the reasons. I mean, you're getting all these asymptomatic players that are testing for COVID and they're testing positive, and it's really affecting the rosters of this team, despite the fact that really the Omicron is not making any of these NHL players sick. So they have to weigh the pros and cons of letting these guys play, and they've decided that the asymptomatic players are going to be able to play. Plus, here in the States, we're at about the peak, if not starting to come down, from the peak of the Omicron. We saw that same type of trajectory in South Africa. We saw that same trajectory in England, where it really got to a steep peak, and then it really crashed after that. And I think by February, we're really going to see the downswing of that crash. So I don't think it's going to be nearly as much of an impact next month as it is right now.
So, Dick, as we wrap, just a quick recap of how you think the four playoff games will play out this weekend.
You bet. I think, again, on that pack, I like the 49ers plus the points. I don't like them to win. But if Bosa and Warner can play, I like a good game. So I think they keep it within a touchdown. So I like the 49ers plus the points in that game. But I do like Green Bay to win. I like Kansas City to win a close one. There's got to be an upset, right? And right now, I think the Titans are going to take care of the Bengals. That one I feel pretty confident about, particularly if Derrick Henry can play. If Derrick Henry can't play, then that's going to be a really close football game. We'll know more about Derrick Henry a little bit later on. If you're going to have an upset, guys, I think it might be the Rams over Tom Brady. Ah, I know it's tough to pick against Tom Brady, but if I had to pick an upset this week, that would be my most likely one.
Well, a comprehensive wrap as always, Dick. Enjoy the playoffs this weekend. I know we will enjoy them. They start 8:35 is the first of them this Sunday morning, Australian time. Then at 12:15, Green Bay take on San Francisco. Then on the Monday morning after 7, Tampa Bay take on LA. And after 10:40, Kansas City and Buffalo. Dick, thanks for joining us this morning. A pleasure as always.
Absolutely, and I'm guaranteeing better competition this week than we had this past weekend, because that was not fun to watch.
Yeah, we are looking forward to it for sure and certain. Dick Fain joining us this morning on the Big Sports Breakfast. In the Netball Quad Series this morning, the Diamonds of Australia are up over England at the moment. So that match at halftime, they just took the score down as I was about to read it, but I think they were about 6 up. There at the moment. And there's a live English Premier League game between Brighton and Chelsea, and we're 1-0 at the moment. Chelsea scoring through Conte Mossi. obviously Chelsea going great guns this season. What impact will this match have on the Premier League table?
Yeah, well, obviously Chelsea are chasing their tail at the moment with regards to Manchester City. They are just unstoppable at the moment. I think it's a 10-point lead at the moment if the result remains the same this morning between Chelsea and Brighton. Brighton, interestingly, their manager, Graham Potter, there's been some interest in him potentially going to Everton. I know we covered that earlier this week with Robbie Slater on who may replace Rafa Benitez, and Wayne Rooney's name's popped up. But Graham Potter's come out and said he's more than happy at Brighton and Hove. So, yeah, watch this space. Where there's smoke, there is fire,
Ryan. It's interesting, Everton, isn't it? Because Roberto Martinez, he was being touted, so it looks as though that's done. But now they're throwing up Wayne Rooney, obviously, to return there, and Frank Lampard as potential candidates. What do you think about that? We haven't seen a great transition from champion players to managers in recent times, have we?
No, that's all. Although Steven Gerrard would probably be the exception at the moment. He's doing very well. But he went to Rangers. I think he picked his club and he picked his league to start his managerial career quite wisely, whereas Frank Lampard, on the other hand, probably went to Chelsea too soon in his career. So I'd hate to see Wayne Rooney do that. I think you've got to make your mistakes and learn the craft. It's a completely different world to being a player, being a manager and a coach. So I think it'd be too soon for Wayne Rooney to go to Everton. My personal opinion, I'd like to see a bigger name in coaching ranks go there, because it looks as though there is some serious issues at Everton at the moment. So it needs someone with the experience to go in there, clean it up, and then Wayne Rooney should take over at a better time, I think.
Phil Moss in studio with myself and Jamie Rogers over the next 3 days. Let's talk racing now. And Brad Davidson, our racing expert from Sky Racing, joins us this morning. Good morning, Brad.
Yeah, morning, Ryan. Morning, Mossy and Jamie. How are we all?
Very
morning,
well. Brad. And a lot of the news we're hearing with Willie Pike has been divisive, I think it's fair to say, with a lot of our Big Sports Breakfast listeners this morning. Your take?
Yeah, I think it's the vaccination policy and all these things. It's always divisive, isn't it? We saw it with Novak and we're seeing it with Willie now as well. It's an interesting one. I mean, I was probably in the camp of sending Novak home, so I suppose the take in the racing industry from a lot of people is that it shouldn't be allowed, and then other people said, well, you know, that they should be able to make their own choices. There's obviously different takes on it. One thing, it'll be interesting to see how Willie fits into the New South Wales and the Sydney riding ranks. You know, he's been dominant over there, hasn't he, in WA for some time, and people have got different takes on that as well. A lot of people saying he'll come in and be a success straight away, and other people suggesting, well, he's not going to be getting the plum rides anymore, so he might not have the success he did over there.
We were discussing it this morning. We thought he might get a lot of the pick of the Hawks team, but away from that, he might be behind about five or six others.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's such a competitive jockey room over here, isn't it? And that's the thing, you know, James McDonald, Tommy Berry, Nash Rivilla,
Tim Huey Clark, Bowman, Josh Parr, Jason Collett.
Yeah, just keeps on going, doesn't it? Timmy Clark and all those guys and ladies and gentlemen have sort of, you know, entrenched and have got their relationships built. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure he's going to get opportunities. There's no doubt about it. He's got too high a profile not to get opportunities from certain trainers. And we know there are lots of stables that probably don't have that aren't the biggest stables, but still got some really nice horses that don't have sort of designated top riders and things like that. They do have relationships with certain riders, but I'm sure they'll be, talking to Willie and seeing what and building those relationships with him. So a lot of water to go under the bridge, of course. But that was big news anyway out of the West yesterday. When I saw it, I thought, geez, just a joke. I didn't think it was going to happen. Didn't even cross my mind. So big news there yesterday.
Yeah, and he's hoping to be riding by mid-Feb here in New South Wales. Brad, what did you make of Startante's trial win in Queensland?
Yeah, we get to see, Jamie, these good horses starting to come back, and she really looked great there in Queensland yesterday in a trial. Very sharp, and looks to have improved off that last preparation as well when she ran really well in a Golden Rose and a Flight Stakes down here in Sydney. So I'm not sure what their plans are, whether they're heading back and down here. I'm assuming they're heading back down for the Autumn Carnival, but she did a really good job last prep. And yeah, we saw the day earlier, Nature Strip and Animo and Espiona and a few other stars step out at the trials, and she was the one up there in Queensland yesterday, winning that Doomben Heat over the 840 by a couple of lengths in really good style. So she's won the 5 from 11 overall. She ran third in the flight stakes and midfield in a pretty strong Golden Rose there, beating home. I think she beat home Jumeirah that day too. So yeah, I'm not, as I said, not sure of the plans, but looking forward to hopefully seeing her back in Sydney in a few months' time.
Davo, I love a good Newcastle race day. Give us something to get on the back of today.
We'll try, Mossy. We'll try our best. I've gone with race 6, 2 mile, a horse that has been going really well in country grade, in easier grade than what contests tomorrow, but today. But saying that, I think she can step up to this sort of field, and what I love about her is she's got the 3 kilo claim for Bailey Wheeler. I don't know if you guys have heard too much about Bailey, but there's been a lot of talk about Dylan Gibbons, guys, about how this young gentleman's going to be a superstar in the city ranks for.
Well, he killed it in town the other week, didn't he?
Yeah, he ran a couple of winners, and he looks like he's destined for big things when he comes to town. I think they're going to hold him back to the winter, but Bailey's the next one behind Dylan, and there's been this growing momentum about Bailey, and he's doing a terrific job in that level below Dylan at the moment, and he's the next one coming through. So 3 kilo claim, I think, is going to be gold there at Newcastle today. And like I said, 2 miles been racing really well. They've got this horse going great guns. It formerly right early on in its career, it beat home a horse called Colette, who of course we know very well, hasn't gone to those heights, but she's definitely back on track and a really strong win last time out. So that's the tip for me today. Race 6, number 4, 2 mile, around the $4.80 mark in an open race there in race number 6.
Yeah, we'll take that.
Nice. Yeah, absolutely. Now, Davo, all our listeners know you as the racing expert. They also know that you're an expert in just about every sport going. What about fishing? I believe that your future father-in-law may have showed you up the other day.
He did, yes. And I don't know about an expert in other sports. I try to weigh in, and some people say, mate, stick to racing. I get a lot of those comments, but I do enjoy watching, you know, a few different sports, cricket, tennis, and weighing in and giving my 2 cents worth, just in a nice, you know, gentle banter way. But yeah, we went out in the boat on Sunday and was determined to catch a flathead, and I got nothing for the entire day, but he picked up about a nice 50 centimetre flathead, and even the future brother-in-law picked up a nice trevally. So I was left with nothing, but it was a good day. And
very smart move. That's the way you've got to play this family situation. You don't want to be showing anyone up.
Well, that's it. He was determined to get a flathead, absolutely determined. I had to try 7 or 8 different spots just to try to get it. I had to go to my favourite flathead spot, had to give that away and to go there, and then finally that landed. So he was very happy. So he's got a couple of points there anyway.
You won't be surprised to hear up in Yambra, I threw a line in and caught a rock and snapped the rod. And then went to the handrail and caught a fish. And my daughter said, "Dad, you got to throw tadpoles back." So not a very successful day for me.
Good on you, Brad.
The great thing about fishing is it doesn't matter. Sometimes you're just in the right spot at the right time and you can land a big fish at any time. You can have all the gear in the world and still fail. So,
mate, I've got all the gear and no idea.
A reminder, Brad's best bet today at Newcastle, race 6, number 4, to my. Have a good day there at Newcastle today, Brad, and we'll chat soon.
Thanks, guys. Look forward to it. Cheers.
Brad Davidson joining us after 8 o'clock this morning. Really looking forward to a nice long-form chat with one of the best coaches that there's ever been in this country. Brian Gorgian will be joining us. Well, the Australian Open is underway, and you know why? Because Nick Kyrgios said it was underway. What an entertaining display it was last night in a straight sets victory over Liam, what's his name?
Brody.
Liam Brody last night. That's 2 intros I've butchered this morning. Maybe we'll just get straight to the chat. Good morning, Roger Rashid.
That's okay. That was a good morning. It was an unforced error. It's okay.
Yeah. Exactly. I love the tennis terminology. But it was the good Nick last night.
It was. Look, he walks on his favourite court here at Melbourne Park, and the crowd's ready for him, and he always brings entertainment. He's always going to bring. You're going to see winners. You're going to see you're going to see the big serve. So he's quite dynamic on the tennis court, as we know, and explosive. And we just saw a high level package of that. And considering also his opponent Liam Brody, who's he qualified, he won his matches, but doesn't quite have the firepower just to change things up at times. And he fought really hard in an environment which would have been tricky to play in, to be perfectly honest, because it's not your usual tennis environment. It's like, you know, the crowd at the moment, and it has been on some of the Australian courts yesterday, it was like they'd been let out for the first time and, you know, they were going to have one day to enjoy a sporting, you know, to enjoy some sport, and then they're going to get locked up again for a few weeks because they were probably, you know, were they over the top? Yeah, probably at times. And, you know, there's two players out there, and I think at some point there's got to be a level of respect. You know, and what I mean by that is when an opponent's serving and they're about to step up to the line, you know, give them a chance to step up to the line and serve. In between the serves, if they serve a fault, it's not your time to cheer or do anything like that. And, you know those sort of things I think are a little bit out of line. But anyway, it was a good vibe out there.
I think I use the terminology, it's like wearing a tuxedo to the pub. That sort of thing just doesn't seem right at a tennis match, does it?
Well, look, I think get out there and get involved, no doubt about that, and you know, support your own players and your countrymen and really sort of get involved at a high level. That's fine, and we don't mind that type, and we've seen it. But what happens is, especially when they go to Nick's match now, they feel like it's their right and that they can, the crowd can do anything they want. So it's say what you want, do what you want, anytime you want. You know, because that's how the atmosphere is always talked about. So it's hard for the umpires to control at times. And this, you know, we're going to get a little bit of a different crowd. I'm sure Nick will play. He'll play Medvedev on Rod Laver Arena, and that will be a completely different environment. Yes, it will have energy to it, but it will be a little bit. It's always a different environment, Rod Laver Arena.
Sounds like the crowd is taking the lead from Nick Kyrgios, saying what you want. But, Roger, interested to get your opinion on this because obviously his performance last night on the court sparks the obvious questions. Has he got the game? He hasn't made a quarterfinal in a Grand Slam since 2015. Has he got the game to, A, either go deep into this tournament or, B, win it? And what about from a coaching point of view, his mindset? Has he got the steely focus to go all the way through?
Well, you know, to win this, there's no secret on how you need to win this. You need to win seven matches and you need to win them, you know, they're potentially over five sets. He got through in three sets, so there's some comfort there, no physical exertion there in where he's pushed to the red line at all. So to win that, well, he's going to have to get over who's probably been, you know, with Novak, best player in the world is in Medvedev. And, you know, 6'5", 6'6", Medvedev can do everything. He doesn't serve as big as Nick, but off the back of the court, he's extremely dangerous. He gets the ball through. He's not Liam Brody, and so that type of you've got to get through the best players in the world. It's going to start in the second round for Nick, and we're going to find out. Has he got the weapons? Yeah, he does have the weapons. There's no doubt about that. Has he got the physicality? You would suggest no, and that's not all. Just the fact that there's no volume of work, so you can't just turn up to these and say, I think I can win this tournament, a major championship. And now they don't gift these out, so there's got to be some supporting evidence behind you when you actually turn up to these majors. And at the moment, you know, Nick hasn't been able to play a lot through COVID, and so it'll be interesting to see what his schedule is like in 2022. But he does have the weapons if all things, you know, if there's a big preparation, if there's a volume of work behind him and matches. But, you know, this one's going to be interesting. I think he can, I think there's a set in him. You know, look, this is going to be an interesting match against Medvedev. I'm not sure where it's going to go. I think Medvedev's, you know, you've got to sit on Medvedev's side of the court if you want to be honest. But I can see Nick upsetting the apple cart there and actually, you know, turning it into a four or five set tennis match. Mm.
Rog, what about Sam Stosur? I just enjoyed every minute of that match. First time she's come back from a set down to win at the Oz Open since 2003. The crowd was behind her, but I also thought her opponent, Robin Anderson, she just kept fighting. She wasn't going to give up either.
No, she's a fighter, and there's a lot out there that, you know, there's, you know, if you're, you get it, and to walk around all the courts, you'll just see how many of the tennis community, male and females, are out there just fighting away and scrapping, and you know, it's a really competitive environment at the moment. And for Sam to You're right. You know, she hasn't come back from a set down for a long time, and more importantly, for her to play some quality tennis as well to get back, and then in the third set, her tennis was of a really good standard, and in front of her home crowd, I think that was a big moment. You know, like if you could leave on that moment, you know, she's got a really tough match. She plays number 10 seed in the next round, so that's going to be a little difficult encounter for her, but. But, you know, to leave on that moment, she'll be extremely happy and proud of herself because she hasn't had that feeling at the Australian Open for a while. And that's we here in Australia, if you just looked, you know, most of us watch Sam for 3 or 4 weeks and then we make a judgment of what her tennis career looks like. And the reality is she's had an amazing tennis career that you'd all sign up for and pay for, you know, from day one if you were given it. So, you know, it's great to see her play and enjoy it as well and in front of her family, and that's the most important thing.
Now, before we move on to today's matches, I just also want to get your thoughts. Another Aussie wildcard getting the job done, Madison Inglis. What an outstanding performance taking down Leila Fernandez.
Yeah, Fernandez, the Canadian who was runner-up at the runner-up at the US Open and where she lost to Emma Raducanu, who defeated Sloane Stephens last night in really interesting circumstances. But so, you know, for Madison, you know, it's a big highlight. There's no doubt about that because any time you can win a round in a major, you know, you're quite proud because they're not easy to do. And to beat someone like Fernandez, who's struggled a little bit since the US Open, it's all of a sudden you've got an expectation when you get through deep into a second week of a major, and you're there on the last day. So she also with Emma Raducanu have really struggled since that time, but for Madison, it was really really good to see her win that match, and I look forward to seeing what transpires moving forward. Because once you sort of let off the hook, you know, off the leash, and you win a match like that, some good things can happen for you.
Now, you'll pardon the pun here, but will the Millman deliver? what does John Millman need to do to dominate Zverev? Zverev, sorry.
Well, he's going to have to do everything, to be honest, because when you look at the other end, Zverev, you know, when you're three in the world, you're making a lot of finals. You won the end of year championships. You won a gold. You know, you're just playing at a level. You won Masters Series events. So he's winning the big trophies. Hasn't yet won a major, but you know, he's been in a final, and for John Millman, he's got to serve big. He's got to play quite aggressively. There's no room in these sort of matches to sit and sort of play within yourself, because I can tell you the score today before we even play. If you play within yourself, you know, the scores, it's a pretty standard scoreline. So you've got to try and play a little bit of low percentage tennis. You know, you step up on the court, make a person who's 6'6" move, you know, to his sides aggressively. And so if you can do that, there's an opportunity for him. But when you match him up and you just put them there and dissect them, Zverev's got, you know, he's got a lot of weapons and a lot of experience in this environment. And, you know, the big thing for me in these 5-set matches when you're playing the big names is, and the seeded players, is the first set's probably the most pivotal set. So you need to throw all your best things out there immediately. There's no time to ease into those matches. And if you can grab a first set and create that scoreline pressure, then there's a lot of different things that happen throughout the course of that match, because now the big seeded players have to navigate their way through and win in 4 or 5, and their level of freedom doesn't exist as much as it do once they win that first set. They're, the big name, big players are enormous front runners. You don't catch them for the majority of the time. They're way up there, and you look at someone like Novak. He wins the first set. He wins roughly 97, nearly 98% of his matches, and the same with Nadal, same with Federer, same with Medvedev at the moment as well. And so, you know, those numbers, you know, they speak for themselves.
So, Roger, Millman is one of three Aussies in action today, and just incidentally, he's a $17 outsider on tab against Zverev. But the other two Aussies in action will start favourites. Obviously, Ash Barty will be in action just after midday today, and Alexander Vukic also favourite in his match.
Yeah, so Ash, you know, it's great for her to get out in the day. So, they, you know, I know, you know, the generally gets a lot of night matches, but to get yourself out there in the heat of the day, it's 27 degrees here today, so it's a little bit warmer than yesterday, which is 21. So great playing conditions for the players and also the fans. So I don't see too many disruptions there in Ash's match. I think it's going to be business as usual. It'll be, I feel like it'll be quite a comfortable match for her. And Buček, I like Buček in this match as well. So this is going to be a big moment for him because you walk on the court and now you're favourite. You're playing a qualifying Albot and Radu Albot. So he can, he's look, again, when you qualify, it means you can play. You know, you're actually, even the players, all the players in the qualifying, they've got really quite high rankings. So so there's an opportunity for both players. Albot will feel like he's got an opportunity. He's playing a wild card in Buček. So, but I like the Australian, who have good crowd support, good, strong, athletic body. So he won't be fazed from what happened in his first round match and having to go deep in that match. So I think we're going to see another Australian, a couple of Australians win tonight, today.
All right. Hopefully it will be a good day and we'll be celebrating even a little bit more tomorrow, Rog. Enjoy the day's tennis. As I mentioned, three Aussies in action and we'll chat to you again tomorrow.
See you guys. Have a good day.